A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is a podcast from the Smart Material Collective, made by nerds, funded by the listeners.
So, Sahel, are you registered to vote?
I'm registered to vote. I'm willing and able.
Oz, are you registered to vote?
Can you vote in the UK?
I can vote in the UK. In fact, I could vote in the UK even before I became a citizen because of Commonwealth.
So if you're in the Commonwealth, you can vote.
If you're in the Commonwealth and you're resident in the UK, you can vote. So use that vote.
Okay, I am registered to vote. And remember, if you want to vote in the UK general election, the deadline is midnight on Tuesday, November 26th. It takes less than 5 minutes. You can do it on gov.uk.
And also, if you're a uni student, you can register to vote where you're going to uni.
Yes,
you can do that too.
Yes, you can register to vote where you go to uni. Okay, do it, do it, do it. Hello and welcome to Why Aren't You a Doctor Yet? Now, this would be the point where you're probably thinking, why aren't you doing that high energy introduction where you explain that this is a science and tech podcast? Well, I'd like to say, number one, we're allowed to switch things up, you know, mature a little bit. And two, don't hate me. I'm getting this to you in a timely manner, please.
I wanted my PhD in a timely manner. That didn't happen, did it? You don't get everything you want, all right?
It's true.
It's an important life lesson.
Also, I'm very, 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 very lazy. I don't know if you know this.
That's a lie. This guy's actually been working. Well, if anything, Alex and I
listen,
have been
it's called
lazy.
Effortless superiority, right?
Oh.
Have you heard of this?
I'm trying to save your ass,
this is
whatever.
This is what white middle class people do. They have effortless superiority. You know what this is? Do you know?
Explain.
It's basically where you do a lot of shit, but you act like you don't do anything. You never heard of this?
All right, can we actually get back to it? I am Alex Lathbridge. I am one of your hosts. On my left, I have Ozzy Ismail. Oz is another one of your hosts. And of course, we're joined by Sahel Patel. Sahel is a journalist. He's an amazing person. He makes brilliant videos for BBC News. And he's explaining to us like how the white supremacist power structure works.
It's true.
Yeah.
I know.
He knows a lot. And you're probably wondering, why do Oz and Alex not have like a weird long intro where they say like two real things and then a third funny thing? It's because Oz and I have both finished our PhDs. Yes.
So there's nothing funny anymore.
We have no sense of self anymore, you know? And to all the people who are like,
is the name of your podcast going to change now? Are you going to call it Why Aren't You a Professor? I'm so funny. You can
Listen, I'm still not a doctor, so it's technically accurate.
So, how have you all been? We haven't been here for a while.
Great. I'm currently enjoying unemployment, or as someone in the gym said to me, fun employment.
That's true.
And I was like,
that's so funny. You're a funny person.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Better question. What have you been up to, guys?
Me? I've been fucking... I'm freelancing, so it's basically one small micro step up from being unemployed. It's the same thing, but with more fear.
I mean, technically, I'm also freelancing.
That's true. Freelancing is a code word for unemployed.
Freelancing, as long as you're registered as a freelance person, you're freelancing. It doesn't mean you're actually doing shit.
I've been good, man. I've been doing a lot of... physio, man.
Oh, yeah.
I got orthopedic shoes. I'm an old man now.
Oh, for real?
I've turned 30, Alex.
Oh, that's right. 30. You turned 30.
I got orthopedic shoes, man. This is some real shit. Fucking love them, mate.
Yeah, for real?
Yeah, settle into that comfort. Old age comfort is great.
I love these.
Wait for the back pain to set in, man.
Yeah, mate, listen, I've already been there, man.
Yeah, Oz, I know why you have back pain. Oz, how's your week been?
My week has been great. I have been doing wholesome things, like holding my nephew, taking care of him.
Yeah, basically, if you guys can follow Ozzy on Instagram,
very cute baby pictures,
cute baby action going down.
And aside from that, I've been gigging a bit here and there, gymming a lot.
Oh yeah,
eating a lot more.
you looking dench.
Thanks, because this is an audio medium. You can say that and people might believe you.
Damn.
I've actually lost weight.
But I'm mostly straight. But I'm like, yo, Ozzy, see that gym flex going down.
Yeah, and also I've been doing crazy shit like giving dating advice on the BBC Asian Network.
Oh, yeah. All right, but everyone didn't know, since the last time an episode went out, Oz has now become BBC Asian Network's like dating expert.
That's true. That's a stretch.
Like Dr. Fraser Kane.
That's a stretch, but
yeah.
I have been called upon for my dating experience. I'm concerned that the world now knows that I have this reputation for having dating experience, whatever that is. Is that bad?
That's
like, I don't know.
Well, listen, man, you're getting some prime radio action, so it's not a bad thing necessarily, is it? I think everyone has bad dating stories.
I just feel like the world is slut shaming me.
No, do you know what? I feel like as you're a very honest and sincere person, and that's actually a good thing, and people can relate to your experiences, and that's not a bad thing, innit? Do you know what I mean?
Thank you. Now let's slut shame me.
You disgust me.
So, of course, the big news in the last couple of weeks, at least here in the UK, has been the election. Yes, we've got a winter election. It's on the 12th?
12th of December.
12th of December. So that means on the 13th of December, we might know where the country's heading next.
Personally, I'm voting for BNP, but what's it? No?
Right. So, oh, geez. So you'll have to have been following British politics for at least 10 years to get that.
That's terrible. That,
yeah, get that reference. Wow. Okay, yeah, cool. That's
who are you guys voting for?
No, that's a hipster racist party. I was into racism in politics, back when the BNP was a thing.
I was into racism way before it was a thing. Oh, man. Before Brexit, you know what I'm saying?
You know what? I have National Front on vinyl.
Bougie motherfucker.
I actually have the early tapes of Enoch Powell.
So you wouldn't even know. No,
I feel. Do you know you saying that? Actually, I do feel like racism and bigotry has come back in style. Like, it's weird.
Oh, really? Huh.
I love when you do that voice.
I mean, it just never left you guys.
But especially around this election, I feel like that's a big theme around a lot of elections. You look at like places like Spain. They did an exit poll recently. They did elections where the far right made big gains. In that election, and I feel like this could be something for the UK. We'll see what happens.
So you look at politics and how politics has changed, and if we look at the American election where Donald Trump was elected, people saying that a massive facet of that was the power of social media, and it was the power of, they're saying foreign powers using the internet, using social media to sway people.
So yeah, that's interesting, because recently in the news, you guys have probably seen this, right? Because Facebook have said that they're not going to interfere with any political adverts, whether the advert is telling the truth or not, they're not going to interfere. Mm. Whereas Twitter's taken this stance where they're not going to allow political adverts to run.
Mm. Yeah, I heard about this as well, actually. And in a weird way, I kind of make sense, because I feel like Facebook is a place where, how do I say this nicely? More easily swayed people tend to congregate. With Twitter, you have a much more younger, much more well-educated user base, I feel.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you agree, but I think Facebook it's similarly to other platforms like WhatsApp. Mm. It's a lot more connected to family and sort of close friends. So I guess with that, you assume that people around you. It's like being in a room with someone. So you assume what they're saying is valid. You trust them more. Yeah, whereas Twitter is a place where you put something out there and very quickly you can have 300 people going, "Now you're a fucking idiot, yeah? You're a fucking..." I don't know why you even come on Twitter, yeah? Wait, like, take your fucking shit and get it out of there.
I feel like 99% of the time is more like pissing in an empty hallway. It's like no one actually like fucking...
Yeah. But also there's the sheer volume of people using it as well, right? Because apparently there's like 126 million daily active users on Twitter compared to 1.63 billion
fucking hell, lads.
On Facebook.
I wonder where those fucking memes come from now. It's just a shit ton of...
So do you agree with Mark Zuckerberg saying that Facebook should be able to run ads whether they're factual or not?
I think his thing is just about freedom of speech, which, you know, is debatable, isn't it? But I mean, I can understand his argument whether it's...
What do you mean freedom of speech is debatable?
Well, he's saying, you know, because it's a murky line, because when you start saying, oh, I'm gonna ban these ads and not these ones, this is my understanding of the argument, it's a slippery slope, because then if people's own political beliefs get intertwined in that, then it becomes a political thing, which ads are banned, which words ads aren't. It becomes a difficult thing to police as well. On paper, it sounds good. All right, let's ban all these political ads, right? But you know, there's these guys find a way to still make it work. They can do it through companies. I know some ads were pulled down on Facebook because they weren't properly labeled as political ads, and it was done through a company which is linked to a political party. I think the real problem here is the sheer scale of it. Is what we're talking about is not like traditional propaganda that we used to in the past, but like, you know, like the big newspapers that we see, some of the splashes that we've seen in the week up to this, the first week of the election and before, is looking at computational propaganda, which is propaganda that is done automatically by algorithms, by selecting specific communities using bots. It's like deep disinformation, and it's stuff that we've seen in, you know, I hate to say it, be the Russian boogeyman, but we've seen it in like Russian elections and other autocratic nations where they use these kind of psyops techniques to manipulate the voting population. And I think that's something we really need to be careful about. And obviously there's this report that's come out that's been suppressed until after the elections, which hopefully will shed some light on this.
So which report is that?
There's a report, it was, I can't remember what committee did it, but it was a report that was looking into, British government report, looking into the role of Russian interference on elections in the UK. And apparently
this is the one that they've suppressed till after the election.
Yeah, it's controversially. So I don't know how much of it is, again, politics, you know, what does it implicate people? You know, there's some rumors around it, but I mean, it doesn't surprise me that, you know, as these tools become more sophisticated, people, unscrupulous politicians will use them to their advantage, you know?
Well, the interesting thing is also the fact that the amount of reach and who it's reaching. I think that's the other thing as well with Facebook saying, no, we're not going to do anything about it. Because like you say, it's a lot of people in your Facebook circle, a lot more close-knit, right? Mm. It's not just, I mean, Twitter feels a lot more open than Facebook. So then anything that you're sharing or you're putting out there, people are more likely to buy into it.
So for instance, if I were to say... China is invading Japan.
If you put it on Facebook, then I would think, well, I think my first thought would be, it's Alex. I know Alex. So it's unlikely to be fake. But I would still, secondary to that, I would still perhaps factor, if it's something as big as that, I'd be like, I need to go find out what's going on here. Hmm. Whereas if that had just been randomly posted, like sometimes when people like stuff, it appears in a timeline. If that appeared randomly, I would be like, who's posting this shit? Why are they posting it? Is it real? And I would take a bit more of a skeptical stance on it. And there's some, for instance, in Sri Lanka, when the recent bombings happened, they actually shut down WhatsApp, because WhatsApp is known for, like, people readily share stuff on there and things like fake news gets readily spread through platforms like WhatsApp. Mm. I don't know, it feels more dangerous when you're sharing with the closer circle, because there's, like, the amplification of belief.
Well, I think if you look at it from a psychological perspective, as a psychologist, as understanding human behavior, well, you know, you could say that it's linked to the power of persuasion. What makes someone more persuasive? Mm. Well, it could be the argument they're making, but there's other factors involved that affect persuasiveness. It could be a communicator's credibility, their expertise, their trustworthiness, even their attractiveness can make someone more trustworthy to human beings. So it's not as simple as truth and facts.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? When someone believes something, and I feel that's a big problem. When it comes to propaganda as well, I think Noam Chomsky wrote a really good book about this called Manufacturing Consent.
I'm not reading Chomsky. Yeah, this people don't come to this podcast and they're like, you know what? You should go back and you should actually read sociopolitical theory.
No, I say because it's a really small book and it's easy to read and he explains it very well. And it's debatable what he argues. But I mean, he makes some really good points about kind of the systemic biases in the media, you know, which we're a part of ultimately in a way. But the systemic biases in the media.
Bank, we talk about how big this podcast is, that we're now part of the media narrative.
Saying, but I mean that generally we're all part of the media.
Oh.
Like, you know, social media. You know, since Chomsky wrote that book in 1988, a lot of stuff has changed. We're all part of the media.
So yeah.
And we all amplify that voice. It goes back to our friends, you know. We all amplify systemic biases and understanding, and those get passed down throughout people. If you look at Facebook, for example, political advertising is something that generates a huge amount of ad revenue. It's similar to newspapers in the past, talking about topical propaganda. Chomsky argues, you know, that the audience and the readership are actually the products of value to companies and government. And this is why newspapers and media help manufacture consent.
Mm.
Similarly, platforms like Facebook have become the newspapers of the 21st century. Mm. They collect information of people, which we've discussed multiple times in this podcast. They collect information of people, and that information is very valuable. It's what makes Facebook such a good business model. So if they were to suddenly go to a lot of these unscrupulous politicians, you can't share your lies on this platform anymore, Facebook will cease to exist. So, you know, that I think that's a big part of it. It's a business at the end of the day, you know.
We've talked about the fact that technology is used by the people, and because of that, it can exacerbate already implicit bias. You know, you're saying that we are, it's just another rehash. It's just reinforcing the biases that we have. Now, I don't know if you saw it recently, but there was an issue with like this weird mummy blogger, like subgroup of the internet. Like,
I have heard about
there are bits of the internet that I think are fuckery.
Yeah,
so this mummy blogger called Clemmy Hooper, she made an alt account that she used to say terrible stuff and like properly disparage like other people in this mummy blogging community. And you think like, oh, when I say trolling stuff, it's basic level, but like, no, some terrible, terrible stuff. Not only other mummy bloggers, but also her husband, just to make hilarious. Sure that it was properly hidden and shit. But no, she was saying like racist shit about black women, saying that they like weaponize race and shit, like proper terrible shit about specific people.
And isn't like this real kicker here is the fact that she's also a midwife that is currently actively working as a midwife.
So she, that's what she's, her brand is sort of built off. And through like a person online who's really great, you have to follow, you probably all already follow her, Kelechi Okafor. And you know, behind the Say Your Mind pod, oh my God, amazing. After she put like a massive explainer of what was happening, all of Clemmy's fans like managed to brigade and report her Instagram account, and her Instagram account got taken down. It was later like reinstated, and now
it has been reinstated.
Now she's verified as well, you know. But that shows just how powerful technology and, you know, the swarm use of technology, especially with biases. You know, I'm talking about it in the weird world of like mummy bloggers and, you know, racist white middle class women, but
it's classic brigading.
It's interesting because I watched this unfold on Twitter initially, and in my mind I started seeing the tweets. I was like, this is going to reach the news, and then this is going to become huge. And that's exactly, we watched it unfold.
Let's use this Clemmy Hooper situation as a microcosm for the political like group mentality. So how are you going to hate me because I don't know exact political terminology, but like bear with me. So when it comes to like spreading false information, there's two types. There's misinformation and disinformation. Think of them as like the opposing ends of a spectrum. And misinformation is spreading false information sort of unintentionally. And disinformation is actually spreading false information intentionally, very specifically, and that's how I consider this alt account that Clemmy had. You know, she targeted people specifically for an intended result. You know, that is deliberate disinformation. So as a result, it's not her who's received like a massive amount of, I won't say backlash, because she's got backlash, but it's Kelechi who was taken off of Instagram. And being taken off Instagram, you know, at first sight doesn't seem like, oh, it's such a big deal. But people use Instagram for not just, you know, putting photos up, but people use it as part of their work. People use it professionally and stuff. So what's happened there is that Clemmy's actions have been pushed into the light, all right? And a person who is willing to talk about it has been silenced, you know. So opposition has been silenced. And I don't think that's unique. So if that's happening in the world of mummy bloggers, it can happen in the world of politics. It does happen in the world
Absolutely.
Of politics.
I think the powerful point you make there is that truth sometimes is not as black and white as you might think. And it can be influenced by public perception, can't it?
Exactly.
What is truth? That's
exactly.
the question.
And, you know, it's not just public perception. It's what public want to believe. You know, if society is already biased against black women, society uses technology, these platforms are just going to reinforce, you know, the same discrimination that you see.
Absolutely.
And the other thing as well, we were just talking about how, so I was saying how I'm likely to believe something that you put out. But in this case, even her husband had no idea she was doing this.
Or even
Clemmy's husband, who like was saying on his Instagram account that he's like very disappointed that this happened and he had no idea.
Yeah.
But then like, you know, he's like right there. So again, it's happening within the same circles. And
exactly.
He was not.
But what's really interesting is now you look at the follow-on, you have a place like Gautam who are reporting on this and talking about the anti-black undertones. I say undertones, but it's very clear, you know, what's pushing this. And then you have the larger news organizations like The Guardian
taking a more straight line.
Not even more a straight line, just not talking about the racism, not talking
about the racial element,
you know, all the elements of it that are incredibly important. And so it shows that even when something happens, the coverage of it reflects, you know,
who's the readership, who's the writer. It's about public opinion, how that's shaped by various things that are out of control.
We've digressed from the point, but you know, this is an example of technology being used and technology swaying the public, how the narrative of the media, of large-scale media like The Guardian and small-scale media like social media, really affects, I guess, the narrative of how we see people.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I mean, it's not just the fact that we are heading towards an election as to why we're talking about politics now and, you know, the role of social media and the role of the internet in shaping politics. It's, I think, something a bit more fundamental than that, at least infrastructure-wise. Like, if you could vote electronically instead of having to go vote by post or go in person to vote, would you do that? Would you vote electronically?
I don't have a lot of friends, so any excuse...
No, but people. But for real.
I 100% vote electronically.
Okay, so So why don't we?
I think it's a complicated issue, and I want to know the exact details of it. From my understanding, it's linked to just a reluctance to change, isn't it? Or,
well, there are so many like different views and thoughts about this. I mean, the UK has tried to do this so many times. Every few years, I mean, we've had so many elections recently, right? And there are always think pieces about why, about potentially doing electronic voting, because it already exists in a few countries around the world, right? Yeah. And I think in 2002, it was the Electoral Commission released this report saying that we would have e-voting as early as like 2008, or the structure's going to be in place.
So we're talking about electronic voting for like the main elections, like the prime minister, or like the big elections.
Yeah, just replace the paper and pencil voting system that we have right now. And then they thought that by 2011, we were definitely going to have it.
8 years later.
Yeah, but the thing is, they've discussed it again. Recent years, it's been discussed again. And they think that by the most recent report suggested that by 2020, we're going to have e-voting. And clearly, we know that's not going to happen, right?
It might. Is it politically motivated? Is it based on turnout? Because I feel like actually some parties, I'm not going to say which, want to suppress voter turnout, because actually that is bad for them. Apathy benefits them politically.
Polling place electronic voting or internet voting examples have taken place in Australia, Belgium, Brazil, Canada, Estonia, Germany, India, Italy, Namibia, the Netherlands, so that was the Rhineland internet election, Norway, Peru, Switzerland, the UK, Venezuela, and the Philippines. So the UK has had one sort of electronic voting.
So the UK has piloted it, from what I understand, but it's never actually been rolled out because it's just been discussed endlessly and never been implemented.
But aren't you scared of being hacked? Like, I would be scared of being hacked.
So I think was taken away or used to someone else.
I'd have voted, right?
Yeah.
And it would have been tabulated. And let's say the party I didn't think was going to win won, the party I didn't vote for. I'd just think, oh, okay, I voted for one party, everyone else voted for the other. I wouldn't know. You wouldn't know. That's the thing, because voting is it's so huge. There are so many million people in the UK. And so you just assume that, you know, yours just was the wrong vote. You voted the other way when someone could have hacked it.
That's true. But I think based on, so from what I've read about sort of electronic voting, and especially the stories that surrounded the last US election, the companies that take care of cybersecurity around US elections, they say that the concern is not with someone hacking and stealing your vote. Apparently, hackers are less likely to directly attack individual voters. They'll be looking for strategies to sway the outcome. So they'll be looking at change. Like, so it's basically political parties and politicians who have to be worried about the vote being changed. Whereas no one's going to basically hack you and just change what you crossed into something else.
Yeah, so people won't change my individual vote, but they'll...
Yeah, but the overall, they'll look at ways to change the overall vote, or the overall result, to sway it in whatever direction they want to sway it. This is one of the arguments being made for, this is why the pencil and paper system is technically foolproof, because you're physically going in, you are going into the place, and it's you using a pencil to cross on a piece of paper. And also the other thing is you can't ever trace it back. So when you vote, I can't trace it back to you because your name's not on it, right? Whereas with an electronic system, that's the other concern, is that no matter how much you encrypt it, you will have to, for security reasons, you will have to have a trail. So eventually you would be able to trace it back to who voted and what. That's another concern that's been raised with electronic voting.
So like an IP address or something.
Exactly. Whereas with the pencil and paper, that's never going to happen.
Listen,
right?
I'm going to say a couple of things about this. First of all, when you go and vote, you don't need no ID or nothing. You can just walk up in there and you can just vote. You say who your name is and you can vote, right? Also, issues of electoral fraud are very small. They're verging on just a few hundred every election. I don't think that's really going to translate into electoral fraud in terms of the e-voting system. Like, you know, I feel like actually a lot of these fears and worries are kind of hyped up, actually.
I agree. Yeah. And so there is also, so if you look at the other sort of concerns that people have around e-voting, the fact that you can vote from home means that, first of all, can someone log into potentially your voting account and vote for you? Does that mean they're voting for the person you want to vote for? Can someone intimidate you in a room on voting day to vote for somebody? There's another real concern is, can someone pay you? If someone offered you money for your vote, would you sell your vote? That's another question people are asking, right?
So the voting stations, you are not allowed to canvass people in the queue. You know, there are people there, there are election officials, there are voting officials that are there saying, you know, you can't canvass people. You can't go up and down saying, vote for this party, vote for this party. Mm-hmm. But you're saying that, you get enough people in a room, in a house, or in a big hall somewhere, you know, and say, oh, here, you can have a jacket if you vote for Conservative, or here, have a jacket if you vote for this party.
Or like go to, you know, identify demographics or populations or groups or cities or towns where people are less likely to vote, because that's the behavior. And that's one thing that comes up again and again is generally, if you are someone who has always voted, you will always vote. Mm. If you're someone who hasn't voted, you're very unlikely to vote. Like, apparently that's just a behavior that's difficult to change. Mm. You could identify these people and offer them money. And this is a concern that's been raised.
Let's say 1,000 people in a village hall or something, and they're told, everyone press this button and you'll get £2,000.
Yeah, and if you can convince someone that your vote, like this money is worth more than your vote. And also, it's probably not that hard to convince people, given that a lot of us feel like a lot of the time that we vote and we don't get what we want. Mm. So there is this sense of, does my vote count? And that is apparently, based on all the studies and think pieces that people do, it's the idea that your vote, does my vote count? That is the ultimate question that stops or motivates people to vote.
If anything, what we need is more political engagement. We need more people to turn out to vote. If you look at 2017, less than 70% of people in this country voted, right? 30% of just people in this country didn't have a voice. Even if we can have 5-10% more people, I think it's a good idea.
No,
we might have issues with electoral fraud, but I don't think they're substantive that people are making out. And in fact, I feel actually some people are worried about greater political turnout, because it actually hinders them in their political ambitions.
So one other concern with electronic voting, right, is the way in which you'd have to do it is you would have to implement an ID system. Now, this is how Estonia do their voting.
Really?
Is to have biometric IDs, which you use to log in to cast your vote. And they have many measures in place. So even after you've cast your vote, the government will then send you a link you can check that what you voted is what you voted.
Just say, how the fuck are Estonia doing this biometric shit? Motherfuckers, how are we not doing this?
Wow. But that's it, isn't it?
Sorry, can we come against your implicit bias or your that subtle bias you have against Central Eastern European countries?
No,
what do you mean? How are they doing it and we're not as advanced as the Estonians? Man, fuck you. All of our Estonian fans are going to come up to you, they're going to fucking, because they're going to come here, right? They're going to come to the outside of the BBC and be like, who's that tall Asian man? That's Sahel, They're going to fucking run up. What do you get run up on by...
No. I'm not saying anything bad about Estonia. I'm saying about us. Estonia is fucking bossing it, bro. We are like peasants compared to Estonia.
All right. No. You know who you're going to get run up on? You're going to get run up by guys from Tallinn. You know where Tallinn is? Tallinn is the capital of Estonia. I didn't just Google that. All right. I got shooters out in Tallinn, you know.
Do you know, I just Googled Estonia as well, and apparently it's been inhabited since at least 9,000 BC.
Okay, you're digressing.
Exactly, yeah. Think about all that history, yeah.
It's over 9,000.
Going to come up and fuck you up. So Estonia has a biometric system, right?
They have a biometric system. They send you a link so you can check that what you said you voted is what you actually voted.
That's really smart.
And apparently you can also change your vote up until the closing deadline.
But that's scary, though.
Right, but... I mean, again, exactly. It opens up a whole new,
layer of issues. Yeah.
But the thing is, with the whole ID card thing, then that's also another can of worms, right? Then we would be looking at issuing biometric IDs to everybody in the UK, which is like a whole other hot topic.
Mm. But the ID thing is a big thing, because currently to vote, am I right, Sahel, you don't need to have an ID with you?
You don't need to have anything.
Yeah, but then, the idea behind that is like you don't no, if you are someone in the UK, you have the right to vote. You don't have to prove who you are. Yeah. That is your basic right. Yeah. And that is why people are very much against, because they trialed the ID thing as well. And, you know, disproportionately it was ethnic minorities who were affected
by
that.
It's a press turnout. It's a press turnout. Yeah.
So I guess you have that balance, the biometric ID system that Estonia have implemented. You know, it becomes easier and a lot more accessible. But at the same time, you lose the anonymity
that we have always a trail
with voting currently, so that is a trade-off.
Yeah,
I mean, okay, based on it, I mean, would either of you use it realistically? Would you use it?
I would use it, and go back to Ozzy's point, is about having those options there for people. So if you're worried about being coerced, you can go to the place and do your vote privately. If you're not worried and you just want convenience, you can go online and you can do a vote with your biometric ID, you know, if you want that safety there. I think options is the important thing here, really. And some of these fears, I feel, are actually overhyped, and they can exist anyway in the system we have. So why worry about it?
And also, I just feel like the whole, I know the idea of being able to change your vote does make it sound really wobbly, but take something like Brexit, for example, where it was just yes or no. In that case, if you did have the option to suddenly be like, actually, I want to change my vote, it's not like I'm going to change it to like one of many other parties.
Hmm.
In that sort of situation, I just feel like maybe it's useful.
Yeah, I feel like this whole thing, this whole reforming the voting system actually needs to come, and I've said this a few times, it needs to come with a whole other draft of legislation to completely overhaul the voting system, introducing things like proportional representation so we reduce political apathy, people have better democratic accountability. I feel like there's a whole, it's not just one thing, it's a holistic thing. You know what I mean? It's got to be a package. It's got to come together. Better access to information, etc.
This is a very good point because, for example, an electronic voting system, in my mind, would make it, first of all, so much more accessible to the people who cannot physically leave the house for whatever reason to go and cast their vote, right? That's, or sometimes I know people who are like within our generation who have had such busy lives that even though the polling stations open all day, sometimes they're like balancing multiple things or multiple jobs that they physically don't have the time to get to it. And so things like that would be so much easier if I can just get onto my smartphone, securely log onto something and cast my vote. I think you're right that voter turnout would improve and would change the vote. But there's also people arguing against it, saying that overall voter turnout is not going to improve just because you implement an electronic system. What's going to change voter turnout is the belief that your vote actually counts.
So stepping away from the technology, is there something to the psychology of voting and how we vote or why we vote?
I think so. So some people like the idea of going to a polling station on election day and putting that pencil on the paper and putting the cross, because people feel like that's very symbolic. People have died for this. Lots of people have died for the right to vote. So some people have the opinion that you should get off your ass and go and do this. I think this is very, I mean, it's cute and all, okay? But at the same time, you can't just say we've done it on with pencil and paper for years and this is like a symbolic thing, so let's always do it this way till the end of time.
That's absolutely. But do you know what? I love paper voting and I like going in there. And if there was electronic voting, I'd still paper vote, but it should be there. It should be there as an option.
Well, you're not saying that people have died for the right to swipe.
But I think people have died and you should, for that reason, you should definitely use your vote. But I don't think that means we should stick to a very old fashioned. We should have, in fact, you're right, Sahil. I think they should just roll it out into more, like we have postal voting and stuff like that, roll it out into more modalities. Or like, you know, I think at one point they even thought about telephone voting because everybody had a landline.
Just like Eurovision.
Just like Eurovision.
Just the shit.
So, you know, I think
Green
the more...
Nil pois. Nil pois Green Party.
Self-election, yeah.
Can you imagine Graham Norton giving the cop running commentary?
I would love that. I mean, that's one way to get voter turnout, honestly.
Does she get Dimbleby and Norton next to each
other? And then Graham Norton just getting slowly drunker and drunker as night goes. Look, for our non-UK audience or non-Europe audience, which I guess there are a lot of you, it's hilarious.
You have to see it to believe it.
The UK knows that we're never going to win. So our commentary is It's laconic.
We always try, though, don't we?
Yeah, we try. We try. Anyway, away from Graham Norton and back to why we vote and how we vote, the different modalities of voting. So saying potentially telephone voting.
I think the more modalities there are and the more options there are for people, it would encourage more of the population to then cast their vote, and the end result would be more representative of the entire population's views. The problem is that not everybody is turning out because of various reasons that we talked about. And so it's never really, the outcome is not necessarily representative.
And so there aren't really any concerns about security. It's not security that would be a problem. That's being used as, I guess, a boogeyman to stop people from using electronic voting.
Yeah, true. And also, nobody likes change.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a funny thing. Actually, I would think the whole political process would benefit from not just having more access to ways to vote, but also access to better quality information that is reliable and that you can trust. And I feel like that's a big problem.
And you don't think that social media or our current internet and social media provides that, or is conducive to that?
Again, I say read Chomsky's book. I know I'm sounding like a lefty liberal here, but I mean, what I would say is, you know, there is an element of manufactured consent, and that is compounded by our media institutions, and we need to have better access to information to make better informed decisions around who we vote. And imagine if they just banned all political advertising. We're talking about paying for someone's vote. That's what propaganda is. You're putting money into a way to coerce people to vote and act in a specific way, often which is against their own interests, right? You know, that we need to really look into that and reform that.
With media, with the internet, you know, you think propaganda. So, I mean, how far back does propaganda really go?
Going to read this on Wikipedia right now. Primitive forms of propaganda have been seen in human activity as far back as 500 BC, where I'm going to murder these descriptions, these annunciations. The Behistun inscription for 515 BC detailing the rise of Darius I to the Persian throne is viewed by most historians as an early example of propaganda.
So, you know, propaganda all the way from 500 BC to now, propaganda has changed in the world of the internet and with social media.
We call it fake news now.
You've said that, you know, we have a system in which propaganda, subtle or unsubtle, is rife, yeah? What is more dangerous? Let's say we've got three things. One, newspapers and current media, you know, putting adverts or putting out biased news stories. Facebook running adverts that are potentially lies, you know, and they don't care. They're not censoring this because they feel as though it comes under freedom of speech and whatnot. On three, the potential with e-voting to have people in the room and coerce them into voting a certain way. Like, is one worse than the other?
I'd say, actually, if you bring this up, in terms of propaganda, there's different distinct types, like black propaganda, white propaganda, grey propaganda, and it links to what you're saying. One is unambiguously propaganda. One is someone saying to you, vote for this person, I'm telling you to do it, right? Another one, such as Facebook, is more dark propaganda. It's like where people can pretend to be who they're not. They can be very... what's the word I'm trying to look for?
Shifty.
They can be shifty. There's a better word. They can be more clandestine.
Clandestine
with their propaganda.
Cool.
And whereas the newspapers are somewhere in between. People know where their political leanings are, but they pretend to be neutral. So I would say all of them feed into the same problem, which is disinformation. And what we need to do is make sure and have proper regulations in place to, number one, limit foreign influence in political in politics in the UK, but also limit the amount of money just generally, because like I say, propaganda is a way to buy someone's vote. It's a way to manufacture consent. So we need to find a way to democratize this whole process and to take it back to, you know, what it's about. It's about policies, about politics, about how it affects people's lives.
So this would be the point where the episode like normally ends. Like, we planned to end it here, you'd have that bit where we're like, oh, hey, what have you learned and stuff? But then something happened. So tonight, which is, I guess, the 19th of November, we had the leaders' debate, televised leaders' debate between the head of the Conservative Party, Prime Minister Boris Johnson, and the head of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, because we live in the world of social media and politics being so intertwined. People are talking about it online. People are following it on Twitter, Facebook, you know, all these places. And, you know, we have things like independent fact-checking websites like, you know, Full Fact and other ones that are related to like things like BBC. So like Reality Check and The Guardian having Fact Check, like lots of these things that verify claims made by politicians. So during the debate today, the Conservative Party, they renamed their main media account, which is at CCHQ Press. They renamed it as Fact Check UK and then changed its logo to hide its like conservative origins and then used it to push, you know, pro-conservative material to the public. So even though the Twitter handle remained at CCHQ Press, all the other branding was changed to resemble an independent fact-checking outlet. So it might not have been like immediately apparent to someone who just saw the tweets come up that, you know, it was related to the Conservative Party. And once the debate finished, they switched it back. And because we were already in a massive group chat about it already, me and Oz decided to jump on voice notes and talk about it. So apologies if the audio quality isn't like amazing here.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was kind of crazy and outrageous, especially given the fact that Twitter is a platform that said that they're going to take measures against basically like political advertising in the interest of, you know, not lies being advertised on there, but this is just like the biggest lie, and they've found a way to circumvent all of these rules in a way. And I'm just still in shock that they did it, and especially given the fact that that was from an account that had the blue tick verification. At first glance, anyone looking at it would automatically assume that that's a real fact checking account, and cleverly it was only done for the duration of the election debate.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't need to be done for a very long time, like the election debate just an hour. So as long as they have like that key time during the debate where people will look at it, like, you know, they'll glance at the tweets and not like interrogate the account further, then they're all right. But yeah, like their account is verified, and the fact that they've done this, they did it on purpose, you know, it's being purposely like misrepresenting themselves in order to trick people. It's fuckery.
What I would be interested to know is, first of all, how well did it work? Do you think, or do we think, that people actually fell for it? And also, second of all, what I'm interested to know is, surely this is such a violation that someone has to get into trouble for this.
Of course, it's obviously going to be the social media intern who is then fired or something.
I mean, really, what's probably going to happen is they're going to get away with what they've just done because it was for a brief moment. And I don't know, it's just crazy. I'm just still reeling from it. It's crazy that that's something that somebody thought was a normal, fine thing to do during what was a very important live debate that was happening, where people are very quickly scrolling the social medias to see public response to it. It's nuts. And I'm guessing, just based on the sort of what's happening on Twitter now, but just after debate, that a lot of people are kind of taking the piss out of it. Like, lots of other people have changed their accounts to Fact Check UK. So I'm guessing that very quickly people are realizing that that account was, in fact, someone was trying to pull a fast one on there. And they initially, I thought this is very damaging, but now that people are very quickly catching on to it, I'm wondering if maybe their clever kind of trick didn't work because everyone's cottoned onto it, and whether that's, and also how much is that going to affect the way people eventually vote? Because that's the end game, isn't it? People want to try and sway people with false advertising, no matter what approach they take.
But I think you saying that, oh, people are taking the piss out of it. Yeah, like looking at it right now, people are changing their names to like Fact Check UK and stuff and tweeting out just random inane stuff. But also you got to remember that this is like our bubble, our social media bubble. And so I was saying that, oh, it probably didn't work because you see lots of people are cottoning onto it. Yeah, we're seeing that, but chances are there are lots of people online who are not seeing that and who aren't seeing all the mocking of it. They're just seeing it and they saw it as like a factual thing. They just saw it as those tweets being factual and they're logged off or whatever. So yeah, I think we can mock it now, but it's still, it has power.
But also, if you think about the bubble, then the type of people who then follow that specific account, they also are probably within that bubble who are just willing to, I don't know, but I just think if they're not, maybe not people who could be swayed, or although I could be wrong on that one, maybe there are people who follow those accounts who could be swayed by what's being posted by, you know, the basically what really was the press office of a political party. But however, what my initial frustration with when that happened, because I was like, this is such, this shouldn't be, this level of lying should not be allowed in 2019 so publicly and blatantly. I did wonder if this would somehow make it onto news channels. And I actually since have seen one newspaper release an online article about calling it saying what happened. And so that kind of gives me some hope that maybe these things will get called out. I don't know.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. You know, this account makes up like one part of someone's social media. There could be someone who follows so many like accounts from multiple categories, you know, all of their interests and stuff, and they might not remember that they followed CCHQ Press. And so when they see it come up, they think, oh, okay, they don't like interrogate it further. Also, someone else might just retweet it and they've had it retweeted onto their timeline and they're not interrogating it further, you know, because they trust the person who retweeted it and stuff. So there's that trust. The Conservatives have intentionally tried to manipulate that because they've changed all their branding to look like a independent fact-checking outlet when they're not. You know, they're playing on the psychology, and they're playing on the platform of social media, like why and how people use social media and stuff.
So I'd be interested to see how this plays out, given the fact that Twitter imposed these rules about fake politics being propagated through their medium, and when you look at the response to one of those tweets from that account, a lot of people were saying they were reporting it, and a lot of people have screenshotted the account before they changed it back to the original logo. So I'd actually really be interested to see how this plays out, like tomorrow or over the next few days, whether any action will be taken or whether they've kind of covered themselves enough that nothing will happen.
You can call me a cynic, but I think nothing will happen. Like nothing at all. But having said that, you know, the debate has literally just finished. So I guess you're right. We'll see how it's going in the next couple of days. My final question to you, in the spirit of debate and whatnot, how freaked out on a scale of 1 to 10 do you think Sahail and Hannah will be when they wake up tomorrow morning and see these voice notes and find out that the episode is already dropped?
So honestly, I think Hannah's response will be, oh God, what have these guys said and done? But then she'll listen to it and she'll be like, oh, okay. And Suhail's response will be, fuck's sake, none of these are sexy messages.
So it's quite interesting because at the time of this being finally edited, there has been like some news on this. The Conservative Party chairman, James Cleverly, defended this. He said that because the Twitter handle remained CCHQ Press, it would have been super clear as to what they were doing. And so he said the decision to actually rebrand the account would have been made by people under his remit and that in the party's digital team. So, you know, like Oz maybe said, maybe nothing will change, nothing will come from it, but you know, newspapers are picking up. We'll see what happens. All right, so we've come to the end of the episode. I know this is the point where you'd say, oh, but, you know, we've matured. We've come to terms with the fact that everything is finite. Sometimes things die.
That's a very deep observation, Alex. Yeah, I like that.
I'm applying it here to the podcast. So would you use electronic voting? Would you, with all the things we've spoken about, do you think electronic voting is good in the world of social media, in the world of, you know, fake news, in the world of propaganda, in the world of using the internet to sway people? Do you think electronic voting is right? Would you use it? First question. And do you think that society currently in the UK should use it?
I think I would. And I just say that just based on my own voting habits over the years, I know that now I do a lot more research around election time before I use my vote, whereas, you know, many years ago I'd probably do a lot less. So but that's because I see that there's a lot of fake stuff being propagated and stuff like that. So I would trust myself to still use it. So yes, I would.
Okay, but then would you say that it is the right time to have electronic voting in some form in the UK for a general election?
Oh, that's a very hard question, because we are at a time where so much fake news and propaganda is around. Mm-hmm. And there is, as a result of that, not only are people being swayed to believe the wrong thing or believe something that they never believed in before, or like whatever, but there's also so much... people don't trust the internet. You can't trust the internet anymore.
Okay, so wrap it up. What are you saying?
Oh, I mean, we should keep up with the times, and we should, but also the internet needs to be better.
So, Hale, would you use it first and foremost?
I would use it. Mm-hmm. I would use it. I mean, to be fair, I'm very politically engaged and I follow politics very closely. So I'm one of those people, if they'd fucking make me jump for a ring of fire and, you know, whatever, man, I'd be doing it.
To vote?
To vote, yeah. I'd be doing it because I'm, you know, politically engaged, right? But for me, I think that actually voter apathy is a huge problem in politics these days. And in fact, you know, we talk about the rise of the far right. What about the rise of the don't knows? You know what I mean? That's powerful.
So should the UK implement electronic voting?
I think it should have implemented 10 years ago, but as soon as it was possible. And also, I think it should introduce ways to get access to credible information and introduce independent organizations to fact check political claims made during the election. And those parties which lie, which there are many of, right, they should be penalized for lies.
Truthfully, I'm at the point where I don't know. Like, I'm not saying this as like, oh, I have no opinion, but I don't know. I know I would use it, and I hope that other people would fact check and stuff, but I think I would still be too wary of security concerns. I think I would be too wary of that, even though I know that I can go and vote in a world where someone could very easily open up a box and just change things. You know, we have rules and regulations, and you see a physical thing. So in my head, I think, oh, it's perfectly secure, but of course, it might not be.
Exactly. You've been convinced that that's secure and that the count's always right, and there's no, like, very little human error and stuff like that.
But you know, it is. Potentially, it can be abused. Mm-mm. So
I would say, I would say, loosen your tinfoil hat a little bit. But saying that, you look at the grand scheme of history, man. Power and politics make people do terrible things. So you're right. It could end up being the case. So I think it's a slippery slope, isn't it, with those issues?
Do you feel as though you've learned something new?
I feel like I've learned something new. Probably because I Wikipedia a lot of shit while we're doing this, but
hey, I did my research before I turned up in this building.
Listen, I've done my homework.
This is fake news. Fake news.
I did my homework before every lesson, and that's not going to change.
How dare you?
I have been your host, Alex Lathbridge. I've been joined by Oz and Sahail.
See ya.
Peace out.
And this has been Why Aren't You a Doctor Yet? Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.